With Laura Fox.
Podcast. Now, 2024 is coming to a close and it's almost time for the On Post Book Awards, and my next guest is up for one of them. Pori Kerrigan's Reading in the Queers, Tales of Ireland's LGBTQ Past is up for Best Irish Published Book of the Year tomorrow night. Pori, you are very welcome along to the show with us this morning.
Laura, thanks for having me. A pleasure to be here on a cold morning.
A cold morning, but you're nice and cosy in your jacket.
Nice and cosy in my jacket. Yeah. Absolutely. Serving Carl Mullen, you say?
sorry, sorry under the bus. There's a banger Carl Mullen off your jacket. He would be I'm pretty sure he's got the exact same one in red.
Okay, I'll take it.
Porrig, let's talk about your book, right? Because you've put loads of work into this. But can you explain, just as simply as you can, the idea behind it and why 2024 is a significant year for you to do it?
Yeah, so 2024 is a significant year for Reading in the Queers because it marks 50 years since the actual founding of a civil rights movement for the LGBT community here on the island of Ireland. Both on the north of the border, in Northern Ireland and in the Republic, movements began to emerge 50 years ago. So firstly, I wanted to actually mark that this actually happened and that in that 50 years, there was seismic change. And often when we think of the change in the community, you probably think yourself of marriage equality, decriminalisation, early representations. But, you know, there's a really rich, broader, diversified narrative out there that not many people know about. And crucially, we tend to have our heroes, our homo heroes, as I say, in our history. And we tend to forget the ordinary, regular person who did really extraordinary things. Yeah. So what I wanted to do with this book was to create 14 bite-sized chapters that would be accessible for everyone, both in the community and in the straight community. So all of you straights out there, it's perfect for
it's
you.
It's for everyone.
But essentially to give you a window into Irish queer life over the last 50 years, from the mother of a gay son who turned the ear of a government minister and changed gay legislation forever, to the fact that Ireland had the very first gay boy, all gay boy band in the world. There's a rich history there, and I just wanted to give a window to that.
It's amazing as well, though, when you think about it, because 50 years actually isn't that long.
No.
You know, at all. So, like, even going back to all of this, I'm sure you were able to speak to so many different people. There are so many brave people throughout the pages, but tell us a little bit more about Phil Moore and why she took a stand.
Phil Moore is a personal hero of mine, and she's just an absolutely fabulous woman. And Phil Moore was essentially the mother of a gay son. Yeah. And her story begins in her kitchen in Dartry Park, all the way back when, in the 1970s, when her son Dermot walks in. She's eating a lentil soup at the time, and she always just says, "It's just the most peculiar memory I have. I was eating a lentil soup, and it was halfway up to my mouth when he said, 'Ma'am, I have something to tell you.'" So she said to herself, her mind raced with all the possibilities. He's gotten the girl in trouble, as it was said back then, or he's gotten into drugs. And he just simply said to her, "Ma'am, I'm gay." So she kind of just flippantly said, "Ah, sure, you'll grow out of that. You'll be grand. You'll be grand." And all of a sudden then, in the weeks that followed that, she said to herself, "He wasn't actually asking me, you know, are you okay with me gay? He was asking me, will you still love me even though I'm gay?" And then she realized, okay, I need to do something here, because that was my response as a parent. And I need to educate myself to make sure that I am showing Dermot that I love him. So anyways, a number of weeks later, she said to Dermot, "Could you bring me to your friends? I want to meet them." So Dermot took her down to the Hirschfeld Centre, which was Ireland's first, one of the first community spaces in Temple Bar that was dedicated to the LGBT community. And the NGF, the National Gay Federation Youth Group, worked from there. So Dermot used to go there every Sunday. So he brought Phil in one Sunday, and Phil and Harry went in to meet all of Dermot's friends. And all of a sudden, when she met the friends, her heart broke. She saw that young gay men, 14, 15, had been thrown out in the street. They were sleeping on couches. Young lesbians had been similarly thrown out and were couch surfing. And she said, "There's something wrong at the core of the Irish family. And me as a mother, it's my duty to go out there and educate people." So she sets up Parents Inquiry, and essentially she becomes a doctor on call for the nation. She quickly becomes a very significant media figure. And if a child comes out, a young gay man or a young lesbian, Phil's phone is hopping. So even on one occasion, it's her wedding anniversary and she's about to kind of host a party. The phone goes on the landline and she has to take the call, and she doesn't hang up on the mother who's on the other end, who's very distressed. She takes the time and lets the party kind of just go on. And that's the kind of work.
But imagine how many families she changed for the better. And like now I think, like, you know, my mind's blown right now, and so is everybody else's, with the thoughts that this actually was a time that existed, even though it's not that far ago. But in the 70s, as a woman in Ireland, to take this stand and be like, "No, I'm going to be a shoulder to cry on. I'm going to be an ear to listen to you. I'm going to be the one that says, hey, we still love our kids, and that's what it's all about.
But it's a really simple message, right? Yeah. Isn't it? It's kind of like going, your child has just come out. They're still the same as the child they were yesterday before they said anything to you.
This is what makes them this child.
This is what makes them this child. Yeah. And it's really difficult to discriminate against somebody when you can relate to them. And I think there's something particularly powerful in the figure of the Irish mammy. And Phil really utilised that Irish mammy figure. And just to tell a really quick anecdote, you know, David Norris decriminalised homosexuality, but he was part of a really big team. And Phil was actually responsible for actually getting gay law reform across the board. So she went into Máire Gaoghan Quinn as part of a delegation. She was the Minister for Justice in 1993. And Máire Gaoghan Quinn was like going, why is this woman wearing tweed here? This is very confusing.
Yeah.
So Phil said, Maura, I know you're the mother of a gay son as well. Imagine if he came home to you and he told you about all of his hardships and how life might be hard for him. Would you not want to do something to make his life a little bit better? And Máire Gaoghan Quinn said that was the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it was just two Irish mothers getting together and sorting it out.
Okay, talk to me about Judith Storm, who many of our listeners mightn't actually know about Judith Storm. Why was it important that you tell her story?
When we tell our stories in the community, it's also important that we're being as diverse as possible because it's not just lesbians and gay men. We have had a really rich history of gender nonconformity, gender diversity and trans history stretching as far back as the 18th century with Dr. James Barry in Cork. Judith Storm is one figure that needs to be remembered. Judith was a self-identifying transvestite during the 1980s and she would today be considered gender diverse, gender nonconforming. And Judith essentially wanted to establish a service where people who were not necessarily identifying in the bodies they were born into and wanted to express the opposite gender, she essentially provided them a service and a means to do that. Working really small, so she actually would go to Northern Ireland to kind of, you know, experiment and dress up as a woman and actually had a lot of issues in the 1980s crossing the border because people didn't actually have an issue that Judith was presenting as a woman. People had an issue with the fact that this is an IRA person because the IRA used to dress up as women during the 1980s. So
okay.
That was a really interesting thing that emerged from her story. But Judith used to do something just really beautiful and normal. And this is the kind of story that this book tries to tell, right? Just these beautiful moments between humans. She essentially offered a service in the Hirschfeld Centre as well, whereby someone could ring in and say, look, listen, Judith, I'm kind of thinking of dressing up and I need to kind of experiment. So Judith would then take them to Brown Thomas with a younger person or with another individual and would experiment with clothes on herself. It's like, would this suit you? And would this shade of makeup suit you? And she'd do it on herself so that person wouldn't feel any shame.
Okay.
But they would start to kind of say, okay, that's kind of would suit me. That's my kind of style. And she also had a helpline, a phone line where married couples, you know, a wife or a husband would ring in saying, listen, my husband is beginning to express, you know, aspects of gender diversity. What can I do to help? And Judith was that voice on the other end of the phone. And it was really important to include Judith's story because, you know, we hear a lot of discourse now about how trans and gender diversity is just this recent thing, but
it's not
always been part of our history.
Yeah.
It's just they're more visible now. And I wanted to bring that visibility to it.
Listeners might not expect a priest to play a prominent role in the book, right? But who was Bernard Lynch?
Father Bernard Lynch was Ireland's AIDS priest, as he became dubbed by the Sun. But that is a title he wears with pride.
Yep.
He was born in Ennis, County Clare, in 1953. And he was positioned in New York as part of his ministry. And while he was in New York, he quickly began to see so many priests and gay men dying suddenly around him. And at this time, it was referred to as a gay cancer or gay-related immune deficiency syndrome. No one knew what it was, but he knew that something had to be done. And he felt that as a Catholic priest and just as an individual with dignity and humanity, that something needed to be done for these gay men. But very quickly, he realised that the church was sitting on its hands. They wanted nothing to do with any of these gay men. So what he did was he went off his own bat and set up the first AIDS ministry in the world, whereby he would give dignity to all of these gay men in their very final days, from changing their sheets, to washing them, to picking up their groceries. You know, where there's just no dignity when gay men are dying and passing from AIDS-related illnesses, he brought that dignity to them. Crucially, he was really significant because he became famous and became known as the AIDS priest. Many Irish gay men had emigrated to New York, and when they ended up living with AIDS, they realised, I've nowhere to go, but I do know Bernard Lynch, the AIDS priest, is here. So they would contact Bernard and say, Bernard, can you please look after me? And when it came to their final days, Bernard said, you really do need to speak to your family. Mm-hmm. So Bernard would be the one that would be tasked with ringing the Irish mammy or her father at home and saying, listen, your son hasn't got long left. You need to get to JFK immediately. Get on the next flight.
Yeah.
It's a matter of days. And oftentimes the mother would arrive at JFK. Bernard would meet them in the airport, take them out to the car. And then he said, I have something to tell you about your son. And the mother would essentially say, please don't tell me my son has the Rock Hudson disease, which was the American yeah. Hollywood star that died of an AIDS related illness in 84. And he would have to then say, yes, they're dying from AIDS. And yes, he's gay. A double whammy. But there was just something really nice in terms of he could reunite a family, an Irish family that had been disconnected, had been isolated from each other because of the fact of the son's sexuality.
Yeah.
He could bring them together and bring dignity to so many gay men in their final days.
And that's it. It's bringing them their dignity that nobody else was doing. And as you said, bringing families back together that would have lived with that trauma of losing a son and never speaking to them. And, you know, that would hurt even more than any of this. Finally, before we pat ourselves on our back, for inclusivity here in RTE, why did Michael D. Higgins have to intervene to get RTE to broadcast an advert from the Department of Health?
So back in 1993, for World AIDS Day, the Health Promotion Board, as it was known at the time, or mm-hmm. Health Promotion Bureau, created a series of advertisements that essentially was promoting safer sex around, you know, preventing STDs and the spread of HIV as it suddenly became known.
Yeah.
So as part of that, it was mandated by the health board that RTE would broadcast these campaigns. But senior decision makers somewhere in RTE at some point in upper management did not want to broadcast some of the adverts because it displayed romance between two gay men kissing, right? And it was felt that it was really important to include this because this was one of the groups who were yeah. most affected during the 1980s. So RTE had a bit of a tug of war at this point where they were refusing to broadcast the campaign. So this was kind of emerging and unfolding over the course of a number of days. And Michael D. Higgins was actually the Minister for Culture, Communications and the Gaeltacht at the time. And he eventually had to make an intervention and said, I am prepared to order the broadcast as minister if you refuse to do so. So very quickly, RTE very much got in line.
Yeah.
So even just back in 1993, you see a really significant form of allyship from our now president in terms of just saying, lads, get your house together. You're yeah. putting out the ad. The intent here is to ensure safer sex and get
a great
your,
man. And yes. initially, it is just that. It's just that line. It's like safer sex for everyone, like across yeah. the board. Finally, and then I will let you go, Pori, because I could talk to you all day. Like, everything you say is so interesting. If you bring out an audiobook, I will absolutely hook to it.
Oh, thank you.
But while you were working so hard on the book, did you ever think at any point that you'd be up against Hector for an award?
That was not on my bingo card, I have to say, but here we are. So here we are going head to head tomorrow, and I suppose let's see who wins, right?
Yeah. I honestly, Pork, thank you so much. That's Pori Kerrigan, whose book Reeling in the Queers is out now and is up for an On Post Book Award. Very best of luck with you tomorrow, Erlach.
I'm
so, like, fingers crossed you, but regardless, the book sounds ridiculously interesting, and if you gave us that much in the last 10 minutes, I can only imagine what is through all the 14 chapters of it. Pork, thank you so much.
Thank you, Laura. Much appreciated.
With Laura Fox Podcast.